1, 2, 3, 4, Medium Talk.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Medium Talk on the Blackout Tips Premium Podcast Network. Today, I'm joined by somebody that, honestly, just started following me on Twitter, and I check out people's profiles when they follow me on Twitter sometimes. And I believe the Twitter name was like Smart Bitches, and I said, this must be interesting. So I went to check it out, and I found about Sarah Wendell of SmartBitchesTrashyBooks.com, and I just thought the site was interesting, so I invited her on to kind of pick her brain and see what she's all about. How you doing, Sarah?
I am excellent. How are you?
Good, good. I appreciate you accepting my invite to be on the show.
Thank you for having me.
No problem. And I have so many questions. After looking at the website and Twitter and all this stuff. First of all, the name of the website, Smart Bitches Trashy Books, how did you come up with that? And do you ever get any flack about it?
Oh, all the time. I co-founded the site 9 years ago with a friend of mine named Candy, and she doesn't work with the site anymore. But at the time, we started a conversation about something completely unrelated. This was right after the tsunami in Indonesia, and I had mistakenly remembered her as being from Indonesia. She's actually from Malaysia, but I emailed her and asked if her family was okay. And from there, we started talking on email about random crap and somehow both got on the subject of the fact that we both loved romance novels. We were both English majors. We were both tired of getting crap for the fact that we liked romance novels. And we were both tired of being judged for what we read. And we decided we should start a romance novel review site. And I don't remember which one of us suggested the name, but we were going for outlandish and inappropriate. And I think we hit that mark pretty well.
Oh, I love it. Like,
it's very clear from the title what you're going to get. We review books very honestly. We talk about things that make us crazy. We talk about things that we love. And we're very specific about how much we adore romances, even when there's a lot of things to laugh about. Mm-hmm. We do get some flack from the title. More often, I hear from people who work for organizations where the name Bitches is blocked from their URL, so I have alternate URLs that they can use. That's the biggest complaint that I get. Like, the Department of Justice blocks my website because of the word Bitches, but I have ways around that.
Right. Well, because at its core, like, I feel like trashy romance novels are the, like, reality TV of books. But in the way, but what I mean by that is, like, everybody complains about them in public, or they'll talk bad about them, or they'll be like, it's a guilty pleasure. But if we're all watching it, then we're all watching it. You know, like, you're
exactly. Yes. Like, every single person in America, certainly, I believe, has at least one American Idol song on their iPod. Everyone has one. They will deny it, but they have one.
Right.
The same is true of romance. Everyone has read a romance. You may not even have known that you were reading one at the time, but you totally read one.
So what, as far as like, you know, some of the, like things that you like about this genre of, you know, the trashy romance novel, like what are your favorite things about a good like what makes a good trashy romance novel?
Well, the weird thing about romance is that it's not just one thing. It is a very diverse genre in terms of the different kinds of stories that you get. So you have books that are contemporary. You have books that are set in the past. You have books that are set in the future. There's science fiction. There's mysteries. There's comedy. There's emotional tragedy. And then within those different genres, there's a lot of different familiar stories that get reinvented each time. It's sort of like when you watch TV and there's yet another crime drama where someone is killed and then like three guys solve it within 45 minutes.
Yes.
That is constantly being reinvented, and a good show will do something interesting with that setup, where at its core, it's a cop drama. So you could have a cop drama like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, or you could have a cop drama like Law & Order SVU, which I always want to call SUV, which is not right. So you have, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is silly and a comedy, and then you have SUV, which is someone gets raped every week. Those are two totally different kinds of cop dramas, but they're basically cop shows.
Right.
So within romance, there's a lot of variety. My favorites are contemporary comedy, because I really enjoy silly humor. You can tell from the site. And I also love historicals, because there's something truly interesting about going back in time. By far is my joy in traveling somewhere else when I'm reading. I didn't have to get up off the couch, but today I was in Alaska, and then tomorrow I'm going to be in Sweden, and I didn't have to go anywhere. That's my favorite thing. A really good writer can not only transport your imagination, but make you believe you're there with the characters and experiencing a different place.
So, like, do you, cause, you know, you have to deal with all the, like, different stereotypes that come along with these books.
Oh, yes.
Like, so are you, you know, in, cause you have your site, you have all this stuff focused around it. In just regular life, Sarah's going to the store, Sarah's, at lunch, she's gonna read a book. Are you kind of like hiding your trashy romance novel, or are you proud, hold it up proud? Like, look, here's Fabio and I'm reading this shit. Like, how does that work?
I broke my give a shit a long time ago. And I do not care. If you want to look down on me for reading romance, that says a lot more about you than it does about me. And one of the things that's really funny is that every romance writer and reader has the experience of someone giving them shit for what they read. And so we can all sort of bond over that experience. One of the reasons that sites like mine, and there are many sites devoted to the romance genre, one of the reasons sites like mine have a growing audience is because there are people in so many places who don't have anyone to talk to about how much they love romance, because someone's going to be like, oh,
yeah,
you read those books.
Like, yeah. By the way, that person who does that is always, in my opinion, they're always like secretly a fan, because like I've had this happen with TV. Like, I'll go, yeah, man, I just don't understand why the girls on Bad Girls Club, like, why they had that fight this week. And they're like, you watch that? You watch Bad Girls Club? And I'm like, yeah, I watch it sometimes, you know. And then they're like, yeah, I hate that show. I don't understand, because Sarah, when she told Michelle like not to go to the bathroom that day, and she went, and I was like, how do you know all this shit?
That's right. There is a reason why there are many, many groups of Real Housewives. Because right. There was just one group of Real Housewives, it was because no one was watching. There's lots of Real Housewives all over the place.
Right. So as far as like starting the site and getting it up and running, like, was that a challenge? Like, as you said, you've had like different, you know, there's other different sites around and stuff. Like, how long ago did you start the site, and like, have you seen like this kind of build over time?
We started the site in January of 2005, so the site just turned 9 years old, which wow. I understand is like Mesozoic era on the internet. 9 years is a really long time for a site to be around. When we started, there weren't that many sites devoted to romance, and there weren't that many sites devoted to really snarky and honest reviews. So that's what we wanted to do. But we didn't have any expectation that people were going to read it. Like, I remember I started the site, and I told my husband, I'm going to start this website about romance novels, and he said something like, that's what you're going to retire on. And I was like, you're out of your mind. There's no way. Because I've been writing personal sites online since 1997. I always wanted to write. I always wanted to do something with computers. And when I realized there was these things called online journals, this is before blogs, and online journals were exactly as pretentious as they sound, I was like, I want to do this. This is so cool. So I started writing an online journal in 1997. And in 2005, I was like, oh, start another website. No big deal. Buy the domain, get the hosting, install the software, boom, website. And my husband was right. In 2010, this became my job. It's my job to run the site now. And I travel to different conferences and I speak to writers groups about dealing with criticism from readers and dealing with reviews. Because since we started the site, more and more creators, and it's not just books either, it's also actors and artists and all these other people who create entertainment, they now connect directly with their fans. And I remember when I was a kid and I wanted to write a letter to an author or an actor, I had to go find some address of like the publisher or the agent. I never had the opportunity to say directly to the author and send them a letter. I had to send it care of somebody else. Now you can just sign on and find 4 or 5 different ways to send a message to someone who's created something that you like. Mm-hmm. And since we started the site, that's one of the biggest changes that I think everyone has had to adjust to. And they're still adjusting, but we can talk to each other directly about what we think about the things that we consume.
Yeah, it's so great. Like,
isn't it awesome? It's so great.
Yeah, like we have like our podcast, we have like a comedy podcast, and we do it 5 days a week, we being me and my wife.
But I was listening to it while I shoveled the snow yesterday, so thank you to you and your wife. That made the agony of shoveling, like, I swear every load of snow and ice was about 20 pounds, and I have a big ass driveway, so I owe you and your wife some beer because you've gotten through it.
Well, we appreciate it, and that's what we're here for, to keep your mind off of mundane tasks everywhere around the internet. But one of the things I like is this spinoff show where I interview people. It's so easy to contact people now
Oh yeah.
Where you just go, wow, this seems interesting. I'd love to know like what they think about it. And now, you know, you're email away from just, hey, yeah, I'll talk to you about this thing. You know, people are proud. They want to get the word out. They want to, they want people to know. So, it is really cool. Another thing I was going to ask about too, when it comes to, you know, the website and the design and all this stuff, like how, oh, hold on. My freaking phone meant to put it on silent. Sorry about that.
No worries.
Everybody in podcast land, I didn't mean to break the fourth wall. But, yeah, like you also wrote a book.
Yes. Two books.
Two books. Okay.
Two books.
All right. Yes. What the first one is?
The first one is called Beyond Heaving Bosoms, The Smart Bitch's Guide to Romance Novels. And that was a sort of combination of a critical examination of the history of romance novels and an extremely obscene and somewhat very bawdy, actually, not somewhat, very bawdy look at all of the things we love about it. One of the things that blows my mind about that book is it was really hard to categorize. It's not a romance. It's nonfiction. It's sort of like literary history, but there's also choose your own adventure and coloring pages in there. I mean, we threw everything we couldn't put on the website we wanted to include in the book and sort of expand what we did online. Now, because there are so few books that examine romance critically, that book is on the syllabus at DePaul University, Harvard, Yale, I think the University of Arkansas. It's on the syllabus. Like 18-year-olds are reading my book with really some very off-color words in it. And I'm so proud of that. Like, I think that's so cool.
That is so awesome.
I know. The second book came out in 2011 and it's called Everything I Know About Love I Learned from Romance Novels. And while the first book was a critical examination, this is sort of like a giant party with confetti and balloons all about what makes the romance genre awesome. One of the things that most romance readers hear over and over is that romance is a horrible thing because it gives women unrealistic expectations of relationships and sex. And that's actually completely untrue. Unless you think it's unrealistic for women to want to have satisfying sex lives and want to have good orgasms and want to have healthy relationships. Those are the expectations that are being built in romance, not anything bad. Right. I have no problem with women wanting good orgasms and a fulfilling emotional life. So the book is an examination of all of the things that women learn from romances and why they're all good.
Yeah, I agree. Cause I mean, I hate the, like how people get so prudish about sex and stuff. Cause, I've read different books or whatever. Never really dove into a quote unquote trashy romance novel.
I think I need to recommend one for you.
You know what? I think we should end the show with some recommendations. I'm serious about that. I will be asking that question.
I will bring it.
But I have, perhaps perused a couple of my mom's books when I was younger. And, when I read them, the first thing I went was like, there's a lot of fucking going on in these books, you know.
That's right.
They actually made a movie out of Waiting to Exhale. Which having read the book first and then watching the movie, I was like, they took all the sex out. Like,
yep.
It's a ton of sex. There's a scene in Waiting to Exhale where a dude puts his toe in a woman's vagina after not being able to like truly sexually satisfy her the regular way. But then,
how big were his feet? My God.
Right. He must have had like at least size like 13 or 14. And like they, you know, that's a big scene in the book where she kind of is like, you know, maybe this dude's not too bad. And I remember being like, I wonder if they're going to show it in the movie. Of course they didn't show it in the movie. It's like the big secret is like, you can't be having these women out here getting sexually satisfied through some freaky shit. Another thing, you were talking about how people view this as like, affecting relationships and women's, view on relationships and whatnot, and having unrealistic expectations. Have you ever, had to deal with like dating a guy or has your husband ever been, like intimidated by the books almost or anything like that?
No, I met my husband in high school and I've known him since he had a mullet. So there's not a lot of shit that he can give me because I can just be like, I saw you when you were 17 and you had a mullet. And so I've known him for so long that we can give each other so much shit. He has never once criticized what I read. And we have a really good relationship because we have been friends and we've been together and we basically became adults around each other. We learned how we wanted to be and how we wanted to grow up. He would never, it would never occur to him to police or critique what I read. But when I do go to like family events, even the holiday party this past December for my husband's extended family, one of the distant relatives who I don't see more than once a year toddled right up to me and was like, I cannot believe you make your job out of that trash. And I looked at her, I said, I know, isn't it great?
Right.
Suck it, bitch.
Right. That's the thing too, is like, I bet a lot of people that, you know, like read the website, that go to, you know, go to seminars, they like hear you speak and stuff. I bet a lot of them get flack in their lives from, you know,
because
I think men's egos are so fragile and we're so catered to all the time that the second that a woman becomes sexually empowered or enabled or, you know, has a fantasy that, you know, is outside of your penis, it's like, oh no, what is this going to do to my life?
Yep. And it's not just men either. Women police each other just as much. But what's fascinating to me is that once you meet a romance reader and you sort of recognize that you like the same books, there is no shortage of stuff to talk about. And part of that is because a romance is trying to invite your empathy. It's trying to make you feel. It's trying to make you feel a connection for the characters. It's trying to show you what these really intimate emotions are like for these characters, because romances are essentially courtship, and there could be sex and there could not be sex. There could be kinky sex. There could be some steamy handholding. There's wide variety. Mm-hmm. What's always present is a courtship and an emotion. And so when you meet a romance reader and you know you already like those books, you already have this great platform for a really open conversation, which is why if you start following different romance writers and different romance readers, at least once a day, someone's talking about sexuality or body image or shaming and all of these issues that we're just talking about publicly now instead of quietly as we talk about books. It changes the way that we converse in public, because most of us reach a point where we just break our give a shits and we don't care.
Yeah, it's also like the sex that is in the books, it's not like it's so straightforward, you know, like it's kind of written about with different terms and like,
oh, yeah.
You know, you learn a lot. And I think it's one of the things that makes it kind of interesting. I didn't even know that I would like, because I, you know, I've read plenty of books, but I think for dudes, like, we're not really told to read that kind of stuff. So like, I didn't realize that you could get turned on from reading a book until I was reading, you know, like my mom's old books, and it'd be like, his throbbing manhood. And I'm like, what? Oh, I think this dude's putting his penis inside this lady.
I know, right?
She was undulating. Let me go find a dictionary so I can see if that should be making me hard or not.
Yeah. And plus, men are not taught anything about sexuality. You're just expected to know.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, you're just expected to get a boner and stick it in the next available space.
Yeah.
And that's not fair to you either. I mean, I have two young boys. They're 8 and 6. And one of the things that I think about when it's time for me to talk to them about sex is that it is just as important for me to explain to them that it is not okay for them to indiscriminately have sex with people just because they're available. That's not respectful of yourself, and that's not respectful of them. And there is stuff to learn about how to do this. Men are never taught this is how a woman's body works. This is how different women experience pleasure. I think there's just sort of this assumption that like the minute you can maintain an erection, all of this knowledge just falls from the sky. And I don't know a single dude for whom that's true. Everybody has to learn how to do this. It's not like it's easy.
Yeah. And actually, whenever you do get an erection, you get a lot dumber. Like it's not. Nobody
I know.
Really...
The blood leaves your brain.
Right. <It's low> Right. You become a freaking caveman. It's kind of weird, actually.
Ah.
So another thing I'm reading on your site, I need to know, what exactly is man titty and what does it refer to?
Man titty is the fact that most romance novels feature a bare-chested man with absolutely enormous pectoral muscles. And so I just started calling it man titty because you all these books look the same. And it's so funny because you look at the cover and it just screams at you, this is a romance. Do you see the large pectoral muscles? And there's actually a reason that those covers exist. Most romance readers are shopping very quickly. Either we're in the grocery store or we're in a bookstore and we don't have a lot of time to browse, or we're online just trying to find the books that we want. And that communicates very clearly, this is a romance. There's going to be a courtship. There's going to be a happy ending. And if this is what you're looking for, go for the man titty. those books originally developed covers like that because book buyers were men, and they thought that a woman with giant breasts and big hair and a guy with his shirt off was going to communicate most clearly that that was a romance, and that became the look of romance novels.
Oh.
And so the cover images change, but the man titty endures.
Yeah,
and the fact that there's different models with different pectoral development sizes is hilarious. Like, I had to do an advertisement once for an author, mm-hmm. and the dude on her cover had the biggest, roundest pectoral muscles. And the close-up was so – the image was such a tight close-up. It was so close on his chest that if I didn't shade it correctly, it looked like he had at least a C-cup. Like, they were big and they were round. I mean, they – like, I was envious of the gravitational lift this guy was experiencing. And I emailed the author and I said, you know, I'm not trying to be an asshole here, but do you know that that guy has at least a C cup? And she wrote back, oh, he is at least a D. He's bigger than me.
Yeah, those, I mean, and also, you know, I bet back in the day when people were shopping, especially if it was men, they didn't want to browse. You know, they didn't want to be the guy who's like weighing between like two books, like looking really heavy, like, oh man, which man titty is the best?
Well, now readers know more and more not to look for the man titty, but to look for author name and different genres and different cover styles. And all of the different genres within romance, the different kinds, all look slightly distinct. But the man titty is sort of like the enduring icon ever since Fabio. So I talk about it a lot because it's just, it's omnipresent. It's always there.
You know, that's a lot like pornography. When I used to shop for it in person,
yep.
You learn quickly. After several wasted purchases and just dollars down the drain, that is not about the cover. It's about the people who write it or directed, the people who are in it, because you will always be let down just looking at the cover. So yeah, I could definitely see the relation. And also the same relation to, you don't really want to browse it too long, you know, you kind of,
yeah, somebody will come up to you and say something douchey,
right?
And you just want to move on with your life and not deal with the assholes.
So, now as far as like going out and speaking and stuff, like what kind of stuff do you speak about? And, like what kind of, like, have you been any interesting places?
Well, last year I was invited to three conferences in Australia. So
wow.
I was in Australia for 3.5 weeks last year. I was a honored guest of the Romance Writers of Australia conference. And I did a whole session on reviews, how to find them online, how to deal with them, how to use them, and how to make them work for you. And also about dealing with different review blogs and how we're all a little different. Up until readers started review blogs, there were really no publications save one or two that would even talk about romance novels. They are not in the New York Times Book Review. They're not in any other publication except for Romantic Times Magazine and another magazine that I think is no longer published called Affaire de Coeur. Other than that, there was no one talking about romances critically until the internet came along and we had the ability to write books that we wanted to read. We wanted to write about books that we wanted to read. So when you're an author now and you publish a book, you need to have reviews. But you also have to deal with the fact that not everyone's going to like your review. And it can be a little awkward and it can be a little difficult. So one of the things I talk about is how to identify which sites are more likely to like your book and what to do if they don't, because it's not the end of the world.
Oh, okay. Okay. And so like, what do you do if, people don't like your book? Cause I'm sure that happens, you know, a lot. And there's a lot of reasons I'm sure people don't like the books, but especially with so much being tied up in like morals, you know,
yep.
And like, maybe it's a quality work of art, but, I'm a prude and I do not approve of you talking about penises and stuff. So like, what do you advise people to do?
Well, the first thing you have to realize is that once you publish a book, the experience of reading the book belongs to the reader, and that book doesn't just belong to you anymore. As soon as it's released and someone pays money for it, their experience with the book belongs to them, and they're not wrong. Mm-hmm. You can't say that a reader is wrong because it just makes you look like a giant douche. The other thing is that if everyone online at Amazon or Goodreads or wherever has said nothing but great things about your book, and then one reader comes along and says, I did not like it, and here's why. That one negative review makes all of the other positive reviews much more credible.
Mm.
And it makes your book as a whole look more legitimate, because now there's someone who's saying, oh, I did not like that. And most readers are very, very sophisticated when they shop for books online. There's no one person who's the final word on any book. So if I didn't like it, I can guarantee, and I know from my affiliate sales reports, that if I explain why I didn't like it, there is always at least three or four readers that day who say, oh, I love all of those things. Click, click, buy, because I want to read it. Right. I'm not the last word on a book, and no other reader is. The minute you have both positive and negative reviews, that creates more curiosity because readers want to know where they stand, and they want to know if this is the kind of thing that they like. And once a reader finds an author that they like, they will find everything that author has written. So a bad review always works in your favor, if only to make all of the positive reviews more believable.
Well, you know, speaking of books that are getting positive reviews and actually kind of going into the next, like, you know, the next stratosphere with a movie, what do you think about 50 Shades of Grey and its popularity? Like, is that a thing within the industry? Like, do people hate
it? Oh, Lord,
that
yes.
Okay.
I started talking about 50 Shades. It really hit the media around January, February of 2011, I think it was. And I started talking about it late that year because someone had said to me, you know, you like this kind of book. You might really like this. And I started to read it. And there were all these women who were saying it was so arousing and they were so turned on. And I thought it was so depressing because I was like, this is not hot. This is depressing. I don't like this character. Part of the problem with 50 Shades is that it is all told from one person's deep perspective. It's all first person. So it's, I did this and I saw that. And you're in this character's head and I did not like her. And I didn't like Bella from Twilight either. So, and which isn't a surprise because 50 Shades is Twilight fanfic. So once I realized that I didn't like the character and I didn't want to be in her head, and the book is so long, I was never making any progress as I read it. Like, the little percentage on the bottom of my e-reader never moved. I kept turning pages and I never got anywhere. And I was like, this book is making me miserable. So I reviewed it and I said I did not finish it because I hated it. Here are all the reasons why. Then it hit the media and everyone started talking about this book and it was the biggest deal. And I was like, really? But it's terribly depressing. I was the only one who thought it was a total downer. I ended up talking about that book a bunch more times because it did do some positive things for publishing. For one thing, it made a couple of publishers a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It also helped jumpstart the career of authors who were writing similar contemporary and extremely explicit erotic books. And it helped people discover, hey, maybe they're kinky and they like that. And if that was a book that helped you realize that you like being in dominant and submissive role play or that you're kinky, gone with your bad self. That's awesome. If you discover your sexuality through a book, any book, that's excellent. That book itself, oh God, I did not like it at all. It was so depressing.
Well, maybe,
excuse me. It was so depressing.
Oh. Also, like, you know, there's probably people who weren't really interested in the genre at all. And it can be like a good crossover type of book that gets you into it. And then you start reading better stuff. And then later on, it's kind of like, for me as a nerd, and I'm sure this is blasphemy, so nobody write me, but, like Star Wars, the original trilogy, I think those movies age horribly and I don't think they're really that good, but I was like, you know, 8 when I saw them. So I thought they were the best thing in the world.
Yep.
And now as an adult, I'm like, yeah, that was shit. But you know, I always hold a nice place in my heart.
That's right.
For the fact that it got me in. So I feel like 50 Shades, the way that, I mean, it's even getting a movie and you know, they have
how the hell are they going to make a movie out of that? I mean, if they won't even show a dude putting his toe inside a woman's hoo-ha in How Stella Got Her Groove Back, or no, not How Stella Got Her Groove Back.
Waiting to Exhale, but very close. I read that book too.
Thank you. Waiting to Exhale. If they're not going to show toe in hoo-ha action, how in the hell are they going to make a movie of 50 Shades and keep it above an, or keep it below an NC-17 rating? I mean, it's just not possible.
Right.
There's some very strange things that go on in that book in terms of how you would make a movie out of them. Like, there's one scene where he just, like, walks up and pulls out her tampon. And I was just like, how the hell are you going to put that in a movie?
Yeah,
please tell me.
There's just no way. Like, unless this is coming out in Japan first, is there's no way that they're going to be able to get that done. And they were going to do it with, like, credible actors and stuff. And I'm like, who's putting their career on the line to be these people, man? It's going to be
the other thing is that so many women read that book and found it extremely erotic. And I mean, even my kid's pediatrician was like, oh, I love that book. And I bought my husband a gray tie. And I was like, I'm not prepared to know this about you, but okay. That's great. can I have my flu shot now? And this was such an incredibly erotic experience for so many women. When you read, you're by yourself. Do you want to go watch an erotic movie in a theater full of a bunch of other strangers?
Yeah.
You know, like, how is that going to work? Is this going to be like direct to DVD? Are people going to have private watching parties? Is there going to be like a special private movie theater and you book all your friends? Like, how is that going to work? Because I love reading romance about extremely sexual and interesting situations. I wouldn't want to watch that on a screen with a bunch of strangers in New Jersey. Yeah, come on.
There's a couple things to it. One, the thing in your head, like that, the thing that makes books so much better than pretty much every other form of media is that 50% of it is just in your brain. You add the details yourself, you make it up, and you know, if something is, really cool, like, say, for example, The Hunger Games. The Hunger Games ends up becoming a movie. People that read the book go see the movie, and all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute.
It doesn't match what they thought in their head.
Yeah, I didn't think this character was black. I thought this character was that, and I thought this was this. And it's like, you know, not, for whatever reason they didn't think it was black, throw that out. But what I am saying is, I think, the love affair they had with the book was because half of it was in their brain.
That's right.
Once you take it out and put Charlie Hunnam as the guy who's going to be beating up women and BDSM in them, is all of a sudden he might not have been Charlie Hunnam in your head. He might have been, some other, he might have been Michael Fassbender, you know?
That's right.
So I do think that that'll be an issue. Then the second thing is, I wonder, like, how many people, know that there's, like, if that's all you're watching it for, you know, there's, like, pornography that has some pretty hardcore BDSM stuff in it that, you know, probably mirrors some of the stuff in the book.
Yep.
If you just want to go for that erotic experience, because I feel like Hollywood's going to have to strip it down.
Oh, yeah.
To put it on the screen. You just can't have but so much stuff out there.
Plus, the BDSM that's in 50 Shades of Grey is incredibly inaccurate and very, very unsafe. Mm. Like, BDSM romance has been a thing for more than 10 years. There's a couple of conferences I go to every year, and one of them is the Romantic Times Book Lovers Convention. And that is basically a fan convention for readers and authors of romance. It's our Comic-Con. It's our Dragon-Con. It's all about romance. And there's costume balls, and there's seminars, and there's, you know, meet the author events. It is a four-day party about books. I love it. But there has been BDSM discussion at RT for more than 10 years now. Most people understand BDSM romance from 50 Shades of Grey. And the problem with that is, in an actual BDSM relationship, everything is discussed in advance, and everyone talks about what their hard limits are, what they're willing to consider. There are safe words, and there is a negotiation and a discussion that goes on before it happens. And at no time is the person who is introducing you into BDSM the person who's going to be your dominant. Mm. There are many BDSM groups that outlaw that, because you can't give all of the knowledge and power to one person who is then going to use that knowledge and power on you, because they could be like, yes, you do have to stand naked on top of a fire hydrant in negative 22 degree weather. That's part of BDSM. Why don't you believe me? I am your dominant. You have to do what I say.
Right.
Like, and there's, I mean, and that's a silly example. There could be some hideously unsafe and scary shit.
Right.
So in 50 Shades of Grey, Christian Grey is the one who teaches her everything about BDSM, and this girl is too stupid to use Google, so she learns everything from him. And the biggest complaint that I heard from people who are legitimate and safe practitioners of BDSM was, that's so wrong. There's no place on this earth where that could be any possibility of being right. It is so incorrect.
And also,
if you're curious, though, about BDSM, there is an awesome series of books by Delphine Dryden. There's three of them, and they're all about geeks and nerds who are way into fan culture, graphic novels, and comics and science, who also practice BDSM. So it's nerds plus BDSM, and it is so interesting, and it's hot, because not only are they talking about BDSM and sex, and they have a club, and there's like a pulley and some, you know, whips and stuff going on, but these are people who dissect everything and break things down into the smallest part, and there are they are fans of comics and they are fans of television shows and graphic novels and they're fans of BDSM. And so they approach it the same way. As a reader, if you're not familiar with it, the Delphine Dryden books are a great place to start because not only are they super smoking hot, but they break it down as to why people do this and why this is safe and this scenario is not. And if you're, especially if you're a nerd or a geek, it's like, here are your people. You can go read about them.
Okay. I'm writing that down right now.
Oh, they're so good.
And then also like, a lot of stuff that happens in any fiction isn't necessarily, the exact, like, it's always like kind of a exaggeration of what real life is, which is why you're watching it, you know?
That's right.
It like, and I think especially with like certain novels, it's to stimulate your mind, stimulate your, you know, your sex drive. And I don't think it necessarily means that, and I remember we made a joke on the show when they were talking about how popular 50 Shades of Grey was. And I was like, you know, you can get this for your wife. You can read it yourself. Just don't try to do any of this shit that's in the book, you know, without like running it by her because
oh Lord, no.
That's not how it works. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's a very bad idea.
It's like, I like watching basketball. I don't want to be dunked on by LeBron James. I just would like to kind of observe and go home. Another thing, that I was thinking about too, like we covered this on the show. There's this new, I don't even know the correct way, but it's like monster erotica, I guess is the best way. Is there any like snobbery between like the old school romance people and the new school monster erotica writers? Because, you know, these people are blowing up. Some of them are getting, you know, pretty, there's one lady we read where she ended up getting paid a lot because she, wrote about Bigfoot, ravishing her. And, I was like, I wonder if that's causing any, you know, any, civil war in the genre.
Oh, hell yeah. I mean, there's, Bigfoot erotica. There's dinosaur erotica. One of the women who reviews for my site reviewed Ravished by the Triceratops, which was dino-erotica.
Wow. What?
Yes. And something that's been popular in romance for a really long time is shapeshifters. And somebody wrote a shapeshifting hedgehog. She reviewed that too, because if it's got WTF all over it, she's like, I gotta read this because it's crazy. So the dinosaur erotica and the Bigfoot erotica, that is all just sort of titillation. And it's sort of like a very short term trend or fad. Like, hey, I'm reading porn about Bigfoot. Writers of romance, some of them are really irritated and a little resentful because they work very hard to write good books. And not only are these very short stories that are mostly extended sex scenes involving X large creature and B small person, usually woman, usually blonde, usually not very smart, sometimes a virgin, they're mixing those two things over and over and over and self-publishing them. And they're not good. They're not well written at all. They are short stories for $2 or $3 that are meant to titillate and also make your Kindle a little bit more interesting, because who wouldn't want to have Ravished by the Triceratops on their Kindle, right?
Right.
That's awesome. Except not. The resentment comes because romance writers have fought for respect for a very, very long time. Mm. And that doesn't help. But more importantly, they work really hard to write good stories that are actual narratives that actually have characters that, you know, do things and a story that makes sense. And, you know, having some half-naked woman running around trying to avoid being raped by a Tyrannosaurus Rex, that is not the goal to which they are working. That is something different.
Yeah.
So there is some resentment, but it's also, I sort of look at these fad books and think, okay, well, in 2 years, we're not going to be talking about dino porn. There's not going to be a dino porn section at Barnes & Noble, and no one's going to be like, I need to have a dino con convention with all of the pornography right here in Atlanta. I need to do it after Dragon Con. Like, that's not going to happen. It's just a short-term thing. It's going to go away. There's always a porn fad or porn fetish, and that happens to be this one right now.
Oh, okay. Well, I kind of like the titles. You know, Moan for Bigfoot is...
How do you not love it? I mean, yeah. You know what? If you're going to go hard, go hard or go home, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you're going to self-publish it, bring it.
Yeah. There's, you know, speaking of which, man, there's within, like, you know, the romance community, there's, like, a lot of sexual, like, you know, like, aggressive sex, sexual assault even written in certain ways, but... kind of romanticized? Is there like ever a contention about books that like this is taking it too far or this is?
Oh yeah.
Okay. So like what is that like exactly?
Well, some forms of erotic romance do have rape fantasies in them. Mm-hmm. And the trick about writing a rape fantasy or a rape scene for two characters is consent. Mm-hmm. In actual rape, there's no consent. But in a book wherein the characters are reenacting that scenario, consent happens first. They are both agreeing to participate. The way in which a skilled writer can portray a rape scene in an erotic romance or a rape fetish scene or a recreation, for example, is by assuring the reader and making it clear that both parties are consenting to this activity. They are both agreeing to this role-playing scenario. There are a lot of writers who dislike that intensely because in the 70s and 80s, up into the early 90s, the Fabio covered historical romances with breasts and hair and man titty everywhere. Mm-hmm. Those books actually had rape in them. Many of them portrayed the hero or a villain raping the heroine against her will. Part of the reason for that is actually historical. At that time, the women's movement and the women's liberation movement created a great deal of ambivalence about sexuality. And at that time, it was not cool in any form for a woman to openly say that she was horny.
Right.
Horny pants, not allowed. The way in which that was expressed in novels at the time was through forced seduction, where she didn't really want it, but maybe she kind of did. And it was all very ambivalent depending on which book you were reading. But when you look at them now and you look back on them now from the perspective we have about contemporary sexuality, it reads like rape. And one of the things that has dogged romance for so long is like, oh, aren't those books all the same and aren't they all about rape? No, they're absolutely not. But in contemporary sexuality, there are people who find rape role play very, very exciting. And that is something that they enjoy and they participate in willingly. They consent. That is the thing that they wish to do. And there are books that reflect that. Some writers get really irritated because they feel like this just gives people reasons to say, oh, aren't those books all about rape? Which they're not.
Ah.
My feeling is whatever you like sexually, and if you consent to it and the person you're having sex with consents to and you're not hurting anybody, you go ahead and get freaky. That's your business. And if there are books that reflect your sexuality, that's awesome. I like knowing about it in advance because I don't like that type of reading and I don't like rape scenarios. So there was a series of books by an author named Katie Porter, who's actually two writers. And there was a series of them all set around a bunch of guys who live and work in the Air Force base in Vegas. The first one, the hero liked to role play and liked it when his girlfriend dressed up and wore like thigh high stockings and they had sex in dangerous places, like, you know, places where they might get caught. And he was really conflicted about that because at one time he had been told that he was deviant and there was something really wrong with him for liking dress up play. Mm. And he had to sort of come to terms with that. No big deal, right?
Right.
The third or fourth book featured a heroine and a hero who liked rape role play. And I was like, I can't read that book. That's not going to work for me. But the first one was awesome. So as long as it's clearly tagged and you know what you're getting into, there are readers who do want to explore that in the privacy of their imaginations. And that's fine. That's not dragging feminism back 50 years and it's not the end of the world. That's somebody's sexuality. And if everyone is consenting, that's someone else's experience and they can just have it. It's fine.
Yeah, I always kind of feel like the enemy of sexuality is shame anyway.
Damn right.
And so you kind of like, even if it's just like, I'd rather say something's not for me than something's like off limits, you know? So it's like, it's for somebody. Like I said, I read my mom never listened to this interview, but I read some of her books.
You ought to send your mom a bookstore gift card.
You know what? I think I will. But I used to read some of her books and stuff, and like, some of them would have like, you know, rape fantasy or something in it. And one of the things I noticed is like, there, at least the ones, that she had, probably like a couple minutes into whatever it was happening, it switched over to like, and now it's hot because it's okay. Yep. Like it was like, it never really like, it wasn't like, and then he broke her ribs and did this and did like, it wasn't like,
no.
You know,
it's about the sexual, it's about sexual power transfer. It's all right. About one character having a lot of sexual power in that specific moment.
Yeah. But I thought it was really, you know, interesting. And then I was like, my mom's a freak or whatever, but you know, I was only a kid. I didn't know.
Yeah.
But another thing too, like, you said that as long as it's properly tagged, does that mean like there's warnings? Like, I know video games have different levels, like this is mature, this is for this age, this is for that, and music has explicit tags. Like, are there things like that for romance novels?
No, unfortunately there's no standard of rating, or that's probably a good thing actually, because no one would agree on how to rate books, because no one agrees on how to rate movies or video games either.
That's true.
When you buy online, there are tagging options for different books where you can say, okay, this is a contemporary romance that is erotic and explicit and involves characters of color and some gay themes. Like, you can tag the book very specifically so you know what specific elements are in the book. One publisher, Sam Hain Publishing, they publish a little description, and it's almost like a warning, but it's a joke. Like, warning, this book contains really hot kinky cowboys. You know, so you know, oh, hot kinky cowboy romance, I wish to read that. So there are ways to communicate to the reader what is in the book beyond the cover art and beyond the back cover copy. And a lot of online retailers and authors take very specific steps to make sure that they're communicating accurately what kind of book it is.
Oh. Now, do you, another thing, you brought up, this contains like gay characters, characters of color, stuff like this. Do you review books, that are like a gay book, a book about, yeah, and like, do, like, is, how do you find that compares to, like, you know, other books? And, is it more about, like, the writing? You know what I mean? Where, like, yeah, it's two dudes, but this is hot. Or, you know, like, how does that work?
Well, gay romance between two men has been very, very popular for a number of years now. It's written mostly by straight women, and it's read by a lot of straight women, though there are many gay men who enjoy it, because for a while, fiction that portrayed gay characters was almost always tragic, and it almost always ended badly. And there were a number of men who I've met at conferences who were huge fans of Harlequin Presents and Harlequin Romances, because they were stories about happy endings and honest sexuality. When the same types of stories became available featuring two men, those took off, both with gay men and also more with straight women who read them. The elements are the same. It's a courtship, there's sexual attraction, but the way in which the characters negotiate their sexuality is always different. It is a very large and popular genre, and it's getting more and more attention as well. There's also lesbian romance, there's menage romance, there's polyamorous romance where the characters are in a threesome, which is usually called a triad, or four sometimes. There are characters of all different colors, although one thing that I wish for more than anything would be more diversity in romance of the characters. Not only not just white people, but people who have diverse experiences and don't have the same backstory over and over and over again. The diversity is happening, but I don't think it's happening as fast as it has for, say, more gay characters or more gay secondary characters. There's also a lot of ways to seek out romances that feature people that you're most interested. I like stories that take place in faraway places where at least one character is sort of like a fish out of water. If a character has to leave one place and go to some rural place for a very strange reason, I am all over that. I think that's fascinating. But other people don't like that. The way that you tag the book and the way that you describe it helps people find what it is that they're looking to read.
Ah, okay. Now, also, I wonder how much of that is just from like the people who write the books, because the more diverse your experiences in life, then the more, you know, you kind of bring to the table to write about something different, or at least differently than someone else would have, because, you know, you're different, you know, you're a different person.
Well, part of it is the books that are published to some extent dictate what will be published. Time to publication in print is like 18 months. So the book that's on the shelf this month was somebody's awesome idea like 2 years ago and was bought probably a year and a half to a year ago. And it goes through editing, and the process of actually producing the book takes a while. Now, there are different ways to market and sell a book. If you're going for a book that is going to have massive appeal across a wide range of people and is going to be in Target or Walmart or Costco, it's going to be the most appealing in a broad spectrum. It's not going to be super kinky. It's not going to be super specific. It's going to be a very, very broadly appealing book. But you can now sell direct to readers. You can sell to smaller retailers. You can self-publish your books. There are different ways to write the stories that aren't necessarily always being published. Mm. Now, part of the problem is we don't have that many bookstores anymore. Like Borders is gone. Barnes & Noble is closing down. There are many people who don't actually have a bookstore anymore.
Right.
And for a while, bookstores had a lot of say in what got published because they were the ones who were buying the books to put on their shelves. And they would buy more of a specific kind of book. There's a couple of famous stories of authors who were told, publishers who were told, by a book buyer, I'll buy 5 to 10,000 more copies of that book if it has a dog on the cover.
Wow.
And the author would be like, there's no dog in the story. Can I add a dog to the story before you put the dog on the cover? Like there are decisions that are made in the process of putting a book on the shelf that are completely weird. Mm. Because you can self-publish now, there is more opportunity for writers to say, I know for a fact there is an audience for contemporary wealthy characters of color.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to write them and I'm going to make it happen. And then you see those books come out and they do well because they reach a specific person. There has always been black romance. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest frustrations of the authors who write it is that it gets shelved, not in romance half the time, but in authors.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Right? So if I'm going to buy romance, I'm not going to think, oh, I can't. Gotta go check black authors because that's where the romance is. No, right. I go to the big sign. This is romance. And those authors would get really, really pissed off because they were missing the opportunity to put their books in front of the casual romance browser. Mm-hmm. What has happened since we don't have bookstores as much anymore is that those authors have found new ways to reach readers. And there's more opportunity to discover books with characters of color that aren't put in some other shelf all the way across the room.
Oh, okay. The other thing with a lot of that too is like, Fox, the TV channel, Fox.
Yeah.
They were, talking about how their ratings are up and how their TV shows are like making a big comeback. And that happened because they just started actually diversifying people's roles. It was like, why can't this, police officer be a black lady? Why can't this mm-hmm. dude be a, Asian, man? Why can't, and people ended up gravitating back towards shows. Because I think people kind of like to see diversity, and then also people like to see shades of themselves. So it's
absolutely.
Like, hey, I want to, you know, I'm going to watch or read this thing now because I feel like I have a relation to someone who's in it.
I absolutely agree with you. One of the things that I talked about a lot at the end of last year when I made sort of my reading resolutions is that more people deserve to see themselves in romance. And we are not all white.
Right.
I mean, I'm white, but not everyone is white. And everyone deserves to see themselves portrayed in a romance novel. And yeah. when that means that you have a woman who is married to a man who is Asian and she discovers a romance where one character is Asian and one character is white, and that speaks so personally to her experience, that's enormously exciting and empowering because it is essentially saying, yeah, this happens and it's cool. So you have shows like Sleepy Hollow where the detective is a black female, and you have Brooklyn Nine-Nine where the chief is Andre Brower, who's right. just sort of like, and he's gay, by the way, no big deal. That's
right.
just the thing. It's not like the whole of his character is that he's gay. It's a thing that he has.
Yeah, I always felt that the thing that scared so many people in the past from, and you know, actually in the present now, because a lot of people have agency online. So it's like, if you piss the wrong people off, it's like, motherfucker, that's not how this goes. But, I think, one of the things that, scares people is like, well, I don't want to write about something I haven't experienced because I might fuck it up. But if you just change his name from Steve to Deshaun, it really doesn't change much because, you know, you were going to write this story anyway. As long as there's no crazy situation that only a Steve could have got out of.
Yep.
You'll be fine. And I think it does do a lot to change things. So
the commonalities of experience, I think, are often greater than the things that are dissimilar.
Right.
And talking specifically about romance, you're not going to have a romance between two characters of different cultures and not have their backgrounds cause some conflict.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even between two white people who come from different cultures, that's going to cause conflict. That has to be realistically portrayed. You can't pretend that that doesn't exist. But if a character is of color and say they are Cuban, the fact that they're Cuban is not the only thing about them.
Right.
Like they're going to have other things. that they do and that they talk about. And it's not the only thing that represents them. And as that becomes more and more common, people are going to increase the number, I hope, of diverse characters in romance. Because like I said, everyone deserves to see themselves in romance. One of the interesting thing about Twitter is I've been trying to figure out when I followed you. I don't know if it was after Justine Sacco sent that tweet about how she wasn't going to get AIDS in Africa because she was white. And then that was just amazing because she the whole amazing. Time her flight was in the air, all these people were like, has Justine landed yet? And there was a whole hashtag about it. And I ended up following all these interesting people who were talking about this both in a funny way, but also in an honest way about, yeah, this is a very big racist problem right here. Let's talk about this. So like last year in 2011 and 2012 or 2012 and 2013 even, on Twitter, I watched Middle Eastern governments collapse.
Yeah.
Like I would watch people in Tunisia throw their government over and I would watch other countries overthrowing their government, and it's never appeared on national TV in the country. Like I never saw MSNBC break in and say, hey, guess what? Students have taken over the government in Tunisia. But on Twitter, I watched governments fall down like right. once a month. This year on Twitter and late last year, I am learning all about privilege and how privilege works and how privilege acknowledgement is really difficult and how different people feel about their own experiences. And the fact that you can have people talking honestly about their experiences and A, realize your own privilege as much as possible, because the thing about privilege is that you don't actually know you have it.
Right.
And two, that same feeling is experienced by other people in other forms helps people understand, I think, their own privilege and their own blind spots.
Right.
So when you take that conversation that you have on Twitter about some woman who's flying to Africa and said a horrible thing, and you think, okay, when have I been that hurt? When has that happened to me that I was so insulted and so offended by someone who so did not understand my experience? How do I connect and how do I empathize with that person?
Yeah.
Not to make those two situations equal, because they're never equal, but how do I connect empathetically with that experience that this other person is having? That helps. That's always a good thing.
Right.
And one of the things romances reinforce is empathy, because you're being asked to connect emotionally with a character. So right. I'm not Asian. I may not understand what it's like to have everyone assume that just because I'm Asian, I'm good at math. But when I read a character who has to deal with constant stereotyping and expectations, I know what that's like
right.
because I converted to Judaism and I deal with all of the stereotypes about Jewish people. And so I can understand that terrible frustration and I understand that character better, because there's always a tiny bit of commonality. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, we all understand conflict because it's in everybody's life. Like it might
yes.
take different forms, but that the conflict is universal as a thing
yes.
that's in your life. So that's how you relate. And also, like, if you've been reading romance novels, if you've been writing romance novels, you're probably of one gender. You've been
probably
writing.
Probably mostly women, yes.
Right. And you've been writing about men all this time. Some, yep. like, you have male characters probably in your book, or, you know, people that aren't the main character. You're writing someone else's experience anyway. So it's just taking another step
yep.
and being like, okay, now let me think how this is viewed. And like you said, especially with Twitter and social media, there's almost no excuse, because if you really want to know what people think about something,
Just search.
It's the closest to being psychic that we're ever gonna be. Where, like, it really does feel like you're psychic sometimes. Where you're like, I wish I could turn this power off, because mm-hmm. I'm learning everything that everyone's thinking all the time. But it's also great that way, because you go, like you said, you learn about privilege. I probably never will. Well, I shouldn't say never. I'm about to use it right now. But the term like cisgender. Never
yeah.
would have known about it. I would have
had no idea what that meant if I hadn't read about it on Twitter.
Ever. Like,
ever.
So,
no.
like, I was just talking.
Now I'm like, oh shit, I say something stupid and I hurt your feelings. I don't want to do that. My
right.
goal, not to be a douche.
Right.
So thank you for teaching me how not to be a douche. I am sorry. I was inadvertently a douche.
Yeah. I was just talking to a guy one day and, I saw his profile and it was like cisgender male that does this, this, and other. And I was like,
what?
Hey man, I just learned transgender like 2 days ago. So, gonna jump off the ledge here and not be ignorant. What is cisgender? You know,
yep.
like I might as well learn it. And you know, that I'm sure that someone's got a novel right now. Using those terms.
There's a couple cross-dressing characters and characters that are transitioning to other genders in romance that are just amazing. Just amazing. And
yeah.
it's if this is a thing that becomes sort of understood, Mm-hmm. Like, oh, this is something that some people do. Okay.
Yeah, it's really not anything to fight against.
I didn't know there was a name for it. Like, somebody was like, the same thing happened to me. Someone was like, I'm a cisgender woman. And I was like, what does that mean?
Right. Can you please explain? I mean, I just don't want to be ignorant.
And I know, also, I'm still 38, and I still sometimes default to saying African American when I mean person of color, because right. Not everybody's from Africa. Like, right. Duh, I know this, and yet it is still my default just because of my age, you know? Right. That's the term that was used. I don't say Negro, that was before I was born.
Right.
But I have to remember, no, of color. Remember, you don't want to be a douche inadvertently.
Yeah, I think, you know, the one thing that I think is kind of bad about some of the, like, rallying on people is, sometimes it does turn on people who don't mean to offend and really wouldn't be obstinate to learning about something. But if you like flip on them real quick and it gets like that rolling steam hill, like rolling downhill thing.
The pile on. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it can get really bad for people. But then there's always like a better target for me. Like I'm always like, oh, but look at this guy. He's way worse. Last night, this not relating to the show necessarily, but last night, Piers Morgan had
He was so uncool.
He was so, like,
oh, Piers, you were so uncool, dude.
I was waiting on him to call her it at one point because he was so completely like
cringe.
It was cringe where it felt like just like this is what privilege looks like. Like if you could
look at that.
Yeah, if you could play it in a classroom, be like, here, guys, here's what privilege is. Listen to this guy. Tell this lady how to be quiet so he can help her.
Oh Lord. It was like, so horrible. Yeah. Oh God. I'm cringing while I think about
it. I actually turned to it. Like I heard that he was like, I got attacked on Twitter and I want to apologize. I'm going to have her back on the show today. And I went, I'm going to watch this because nothing will be more awkward than this for the rest of the night. So it was great.
He was so uncool.
But yeah, you know, if he would just, you know, read his timeline, he'd be fine, you know.
You could have learned.
You could have had a great, like, a great conversation. Have her back on. Hey, my bad. Didn't know. Didn't mean to piss anybody off. Won't happen again. And thank you for coming back on the show. And everybody would say, you know what, that Piers Morgan, nice guy.
That's right. Well, one of the things I talk to a lot at author writing groups and when I give presentations, I talk a lot about social media, not because I'm an expert at it. Mm-hmm. But because I fuck up a lot and I learn from when I fuck up. And the first thing that you have to learn to do if you're going to be present on social media and be honest is that you're going to make mistakes and you just have to be able to say, I fucked up and I am sorry. Not I'm sorry if you are offended or I'm sorry that you're angry. You say, I'm fucked up. I made a mistake and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That just full stop. Like I have said some outrageously stupid shit on social media. And the funny thing is I remember my own social media fuck ups way longer than I remember anybody else's. Like I remember Piers Morgan because it was yesterday. I actually had to sit and think, what the hell was that name of that lady who got on a plane and said something racist and then like 9 hours later lost? What the hell was her name? Like I remember what she said, but I don't remember her name.
Right. Right.
I remember my own social media fuck ups like perfectly.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
Still clear.
I still remember in ninth grade when I accidentally asked my teacher if she was pregnant. She was not pregnant.
Lord have mercy. Yeah. Yes, that's what you remember.
Like, I'll never forget it.
Cringe moment.
Yeah, I've never asked a lady if she was pregnant. I'll see a lady with a baby coming out of her vagina before I ask anyone if they're pregnant again.
Unless you see the baby physically exiting her body at that moment, just don't ask.
Like if I see an arm hanging out there, I might go, are you pregnant?
One time when I was pregnant with my older son, I was one of those people who was all out front. Like I was like a small torpedo. I was all out front. And I was in the refrigerator at work. So my back was to one of my male coworkers and he had been on vacation and I was probably like 7 or 8 months and I just got really big all of a sudden. And I turned around and came out of the fridge and without thinking went, oh my God, you're huge.
Oh,
and he turned red and then white. And I was laughing because it was funny. And I don't think he stopped apologizing for like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, dude, it is cool. I'm not mad. He goes, yes, but I keep hearing myself saying that too. And I'm so upset that I said that out loud. And I was like, A, it's true. I am huge. And 2, it's okay. You know, to bite your tongue next time. It's okay. I know he still thinks about that.
Yeah. I was going to say, he's somewhere right now with a shiver going down his spine.
Yes, just thinking exactly. About
it. I know. I just got a shiver thinking about when I said it. So,
Oh,
Have you ever met an author that was like either a huge like letdown because you love their stuff and that's like, I met my hero, but they're not cool? Or the opposite, where you're like, I don't really know if I like this person's stuff. And you meet them and you're like, that person's so cool, I want to like them more.
Both have happened. It's more the latter, because I try really hard not to have expectations of perfection of the people who create entertainment. And I think that's something that we have just going on across the board with all forms of entertainment. Like, if you make a piece of art, you have to be perfect. Yes. You have to be good looking and skinny and pretty and perfect. And like Roy Orbison in today's era, would he have a career?
No, he was ugly.
I mean, he's a tall, large, white guy with big glasses. I mean,
no offense, Roy Orbison. I thought you had a great, it was a great tattoo.
Gorgeous voice. But like, visually, we expect this visual perfection, which is why we have these people who are so visually perfect and not the world's greatest singers. But then you have people who are gloriously talented with their voices, but you don't see them because they don't get that total package treatment. So I try really hard not to have these expectations of absolute perfection of the writers who create the books I read, especially because people who become really successful writers, they spend a lot of time alone writing books. Most of us are very much introverted. We don't like large groups of people, and no one's at their best when they're uncomfortable.
Right.
There have been a couple times when I've met someone whose books I really liked and then realized that they disliked me intensely, and they dislike what I do, and they don't like my site, and they don't like that I'm honest about books, or I said something about a book of a friend of theirs and they do not like me. That's cool. I can handle that. I'd much rather know. That way I can avoid you and not make you uncomfortable. More often than not, I will meet someone who is so awesome and becomes a great friend of mine, but I know going in that their books are not what I like. It's either the genre that I don't like I don't like romantic suspense, and I'm sort of weary of paranormal, so I don't pick those up as easily. But there are writers who write those books, and I think they are just the coolest, most awesome people, even though I know their books don't work for me.
Right.
And what works really well is that the more books I know about, I'm the person that a lot of people ask for book recommendations. So the more books I know about, even if they're not for me, I can say, I think you'll like this, and here's why. I didn't like it for this reason, but I think you'll like it for that reason. Like I said, there's no one person who's the final word on a book. So the more books I know about, the happier I am. And most romance authors are incredibly friendly and generous, and it is a real community of writers here who, when something bad happens to one of us, we all want to work together and help. And there's a great community within romance writers that is a really great thing to look at and be part of. And the same is true for romance readers.
And the more you review anything, the more you realize you're just one person, I think.
That's right. Oh, like, yeah. And I'm definitely not the last word on anything, because there are books that I really disliked that were hugely popular, and everyone's like, I love this book. And I think, did we read the same book? Because I hate it.
Like, I'm officially a North Carolina film critic as of like the last 2 years.
Sweet.
Yeah, it is sweet. Although it is, you know, I would never consider myself a critic, because I don't go to like I won't even go to some of these movies, you know, where it's just like it'll be like Matthew McConaughey in Mud, and I'm like, so it's just a bunch of people out in the dirt like doing shit. I probably missed this one. And then at the end of the year, it's like, that was the best movie of all time. I'm like, ooh, I didn't watch that. Sorry. I think you realize like it's kind of like, as much as people like give you power by going, you wrote this and now I'm upset, or now I love you because you like this thing that I like, or you don't like this thing that I don't like. It's always kind of weird, because it's like, I'm still a person, and I always feel like I'm one opinion from that person being like, and now I hate you.
Yep.
So it's a little bit scary too. We had a situation where we met one of my favorite rappers of all time last year. His name is Fonte from the group called Little Brother, where we met him in person. And the first thing he said to me was, oh, I've heard your show. And I was like, you've heard our show. This is the greatest moment of my life. And he's like, yeah, you didn't like my last album, and you kind of said some bad things about it. And I was like, I did do that. But you know what? We had a dinner. It was really cool. Like, I actually gave the album another try. Like, a bunch of stuff came around where it was like actually kind of cool. But yeah, like, if you write about people for a living, I'm always like, what is it like when you meet them?
Oh yeah. And it's, there's always going to be a moment where you're like, oh, I'm in the elevator with an author whose book I really didn't like. And from my perspective, the book and the author are two very different things. One is a book and the other is a person.
Right.
These are two separate things. But for the author, it's not always that easy. And it's not always so simple to separate when you've created something. And the best solution actually to anyone writing a book and having a hard time with a review, the best solution for being angry about a bad review is to write another book. Because the more books you write, the less it bothers you when someone doesn't like one of them.
Yeah, so that's true.
Just write more books. There are times when I will like meet somebody and be like, oh gosh, I didn't like your book. I hope that doesn't make you feel awkward. And then there's been times where I've been at dinner with an author who's a really good friend of mine with two other friends, and they just sat there and were like going over her whole series, and she's got like 12 or 13 books, and they were like, well, you know, that one didn't work for me. Yeah, that one didn't work for me either. Oh, but this guy was so good. Oh, that was a great book. And she was just like, yeah, whatever. You know, I can't change it. It's already published. I've written 10. I've got another two books coming out. It didn't bother her at all. And it wasn't until later that we thought, wow, that's kind of extraordinary, because some people would have been like, all right, now I'm leaving. Screw you guys.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, like, you know, you have your website, you've written two books. It is a piece of you. It is, you know, representative of you. And especially in the day and age of the troll, where people like, some people just like really.
People love to start shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're being negative for the sake of negativity. Like I don't like that type of stuff, but, I think I don't get too bothered by, negative stuff, only because, no one can hate what I do more than I do. So it's impossible, you know, where it's like, every show I end is like, that was terrible. I'm going to end this interview in a couple minutes, and I'm going to be like, I should have asked her this. Like, I don't even know what that is yet, but I will immediately think it the second we get off of the phone. I'm going to go, yeah, you know, I'm going to think about the moment that no one even knows about. I'm telling on myself, but when I said, Waddle instead of Waddell, you know, you know, like that Wendell, where I said Wendell instead of Wendell, that's the kind of shit that goes in my head. So there's no review that can be written that's worse than that. Like, I don't think so. But, you also have I've noticed there was a link to a podcast on the site.
Yep. Yeah, I have a podcast that I run with another blogger, Jane from DearAuthor.com, and we do a weekly podcast about romance novels, and we do interviews with the authors. I did an interview with an audiobook narrator that was so fun. Oh my gosh, it was so much fun. And for a while, we were the only podcast about romance fiction. Now there are a couple more, but we're still the only ones who really talk about readers, and it's not just about authors and what books are coming out. It is so fun, because the more we do a weekly podcast, the more people come and talk to us about how much they enjoy it.
Now, what's the name of the podcast?
The podcast has the very boring name of DBSA Romance Fiction Podcast, because originally it was called Dear Bitches and Smart Authors, which was a montage of smart bitches and dear authors. So Dear Bitches, Smart Authors. And that was the name of it for like a year. And then iTunes was like, you can't have bitches in the name of a podcast. And I was like, have you seen the titles of some of the music that you sell?
Right.
And like, well, yeah, but podcast, no, you can't have the word
right.
bitches.
It's like,
and I was like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do now? So I just shortened it. DBSA, Romance Fiction Podcast.
Yeah, that's true. Like we have to name our podcast. Like we try to come up with like a nice, catchy or clever title every time. And we're an explicit, not safe for work podcast. And we talk about a bunch of stuff. So there's all kinds of times we're like, oh, why don't we just name it Suck My Dick Pussy? And it's like, Karen, you know that can't go through iTunes. So, you know, it's like you can make a rap song and call it that and you'll be fine. But if you you try to put this shit out, maybe iTunes is like, you know what? We don't like the N-word, but Niggas in Paris is only 3 minutes long. So your podcast is 3 hours and we're not going to have all that. I'm going to have to check it out now. And see if I can get some, you know, it's about that time where I can get some recommendations, for some books. Now you already gave me one that I'm really heavily leaning towards, because I am a nerd, as said earlier. And, ever since reading my mom's books, I am into some kinky role play. So this Delphine Dryden I might have to check out. But
they're great.
Do you have any other books to recommend for like maybe some listeners out there who are like, I like trashy romance and I've been in the trashy romance closet all this time. Can you recommend me something?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. One author that I've been talking about a lot, who's been writing for years, is Beverly Jenkins. She writes historicals set in the United States, but they're about African American characters. Her new series, which is the Destiny series, takes place in California before it's a state. So it's 19th century California. And here's the thing that I learned from this book. Did you know California was named for a black woman?
I did not know that.
I did not know this either. California.
It makes sense though. It makes
sense.
Queen
Khalifa. And that's part of the historical detail that's in this book. Beverly Jenkins does her homework and she gets the history so right.
Wow.
So this book takes place in the American West in the 19th century. And there are characters of color. There are characters who are Mexican, who come from Spain, who are white. I mean, there's a whole mix of cultures going on in pre-state California, and the stories are fantastic. The first one is Destiny's Embrace. I loved it because the heroine is from Philadelphia, and she answers an ad for a housekeeper out on the West Coast when she finally has had it with living with her abusive mother. So she leaves Philadelphia and travels all the way across the country by train, which took like 3 weeks. So you have this period of time where she's literally seeing the country in the 19th century, and it's fascinating. And then she gets to California, and the person for whom she's supposed to be a housekeeper is this dude who's like, I really, damn it, you're hot. I don't like that. And I will confess, I have a total weakness for romances where the basis is, I don't want to be thinking about your hair. I don't want to think about your hair. Oh, right. Damn it, I can't stop thinking about your hair. I don't want to like you, and I can't stop thinking about your hair. Repeat that. Like, so the damn it, I hate that you're hot is one of my favorite tropes in romance. I love when that happens. This book is so wonderful. I loved so much about it. And then the second one in the Destiny series is also out, and that's called Destiny Surrender. Those are fantastic, especially if you like historical and you'd like to learn about the history of people of color in the 19th century in America. So she's so good. Oh, goodness, she's wonderful. She also self-published a book called Indigo. And Indigo is amazing because it is about a young woman who is free from slavery. It takes place during slavery, and she's trying to avoid slave hunters who will just pick up any random person, whether or not they're free, and just bring them back into slavery. Mm. And she is a target because she was a slave on an indigo plantation. And when you work with indigo, it stains your hands permanently. And so her mother and her aunts and her sisters and her all have blue palms because they worked with indigo. And then she was set free. And one of the details that's fascinating is that she has copies, multiple copies of her freedom papers in her home in a secret place, like in a tree and with the sheriff's office. She has multiple copies of her papers all over the place so that if somebody took one copy and tried to capture her, she had other copies to prove that she was free and they weren't allowed to. It was amazing, that book. I love that book. That wow. The detail that Beverly Jenkins works in is just fascinating. And, you know, you get a lot of what I consider sort of like superficial history, especially during Black History Month. Like, mm-hmm. Here's Martin Luther King, and here's Harriet Tubman, and here's
Rosa Parks.
Yes, exactly. You get all of these major figures. And I love learning about people, but I also love learning about ordinary people, right. And this is how they live their lives. So if, like, the movie 12 Years a Slave is fascinating to you, Beverly Jenkins' books would appeal to you enormously because it's all about the history of ordinary people of color in a historical period, and all of them have a courtship and a love story and a happy ending and really good sex. Oh, it's so awesome. All right. Beverly Jenkins, she's the best.
All right, I will check that out. And of course, Moan for Triceratops or whatever, I had to check that one out as well.
Ravished
by Triceratops. Definitely had to get on that one.
You gotta get Ravished by Triceratops.
I'm assuming that he's gonna be a very horny dinosaur because it has three horns.
Without saying.
Well, thank you so much. Sarah, this has been great.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
No problem, man. All this from randomly looking at Twitter profile, and
I know
I'll have this up. The way that this works is like we have premium people who listen to our show, so like those people will they pay for it and they hear it and stuff, and I'll have links to it, which everybody will get the links, and we'll put it up, and people, I'll direct them your way towards your Twitter and website and your podcast, and I think they'll enjoy it. So
thank you so much. That's so excellent.
No problem. Thank you so much. Make sure you guys go to smartbitchestrashybooks.com. Make sure you guys pick up Everything I Know About Love, I Learned from Romance Novels.
Well, you're so nice.
So I'm assuming that means your husband walks around shirtless a lot. A lot of man.
Oh, yeah. Shirt unbuttoned, but still tucked in. That's how they all look. We've never figured out why that's the look. But yeah.
A lot of man titty, a lot of hair blown in the wind. Mm-hmm. And Beyond Heaving Bosoms, The Smart Bitch's Guide to Romance Novels. So y'all check those out. And we'll talk to you guys next time on Medium Talk. Peace.